The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Welcome to the program. This is Mike Consul. Recently at the Green Build International Conference and Expo in Atlanta, Anna Murray, Vice President of Sustainable Investing at Bentall Green Oak, discussed new research that quantifies the cost savings resulting from tenant engagement and energy efficiency programs. Leading academics analyzed 15 years worth of building data from hundreds of office buildings in North America. They found Canadian properties reduced electricity consumption by 13.6% on average. Among U.S. properties, they saw electricity consumption decrease by 7.3% following implementation of a program called Forever Green. And we'll be discussing all of that with Anna Murray. Anna joins me to discuss this program along with Avis Devine. Anna Murray is, as I said previously, Vice President of Sustainable Investing at Bentall Green Oak. And then Avis Devine is Associate Professor of Real Estate at the Brookfield Center for Real Estate and Infrastructure at York University. Anna and Avis, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having us, Mike.
Avis, one of the points you've made in that research suggests a large portion of a building's possible energy reduction is not controlled by building design and equipment, oddly enough, but rather by its occupants. So explain that, please.
Sure. That's actually the crux of this research. And the concept is that our buildings are just as much at the whim of the users of the building as they are at the building itself. And so if we want to change the way our buildings operate, we need to not just change the mechanicals, but we have to change the behavior of the user. So, for instance, lighting. Lighting is a great area to do retrofits in order to observe savings in energy consumption and therefore cost and also carbon. So, for instance, we know that there's a huge push that everybody should be getting rid of their incandescent light bulbs and instead using LEDs. That kind of lighting retrofit has been discussed for a very long time, has a very short payback period, and is proving to make a strong improvement in our footprint. But it's not just about putting LEDs in. You put LEDs in, and then people leave the lights on when they leave for the night, and they run all night long. We're not doing anything near maximizing our footprint. So we have to also train the users to turn the lights off. Now, that seems simple, but I think we can all think back to a time when we would look up at our skyscrapers and our cities at night and see every light in the place on every floor. So those kind of changes to both the users' habits as well as the mechanicals need to be incorporated.
You know, but I'm in an office building where the lack of movement, sensors pick that up and they shut the lights off. So it isn't even incumbent on me or any of the people who work in my building to shut any lights off. Those lights just shut off automatically. Is that not something that's incorporated into most modern buildings these days?
Not as many as you would expect. For a couple reasons. First of all, while we can certainly put that kind of automation in our new construction and into our overhauls, our retrofits, many buildings exist that predate that technology, and you still turn your lights on and off when you go in and out of those buildings. And those buildings in particular, those older buildings, those might be the ones where making large improvements in the way we interact with those buildings can have such a drastic impact on how much operating those buildings cost, again, both in dollars and carbon. But further, nearly all of those systems, I have one in my own office, they come with a human override, like an actual one. Many of these, you also will often find humans overriding in a non-official way. But you can just turn those mechanics off and make it so that your light is always on. I know people who get frustrated when they're sitting still and working at their desk for too long, and so they just, when the light goes off, just wave their arms around a lot, so they get frustrated, and then they bypass that system. So again, making sure that we're engaging with the users to explain to them why that's there, the importance of it, and the dent it's making in our consumption is important.
Okay, so one of the things that's interesting about this is that Canadian buildings, or the buildings located in Canada, saw a reduction of 13.6% on average in electricity use versus only 7.3% in the United States, buildings in the United States that were surveyed. That's almost, you know, doubling Canada. Is this because the Canadians were more responsive to tenant engagement than the renegade Americans?
As a renegade American, I can speak for my people and say that that may be the case. But more importantly, we cannot compare these results. These two sets of results are completed on different data sets, which have statistically important differences to them that are the reason why it was done in two data sets to begin with. We just are not able to put them together because the buildings have characteristics and behaviors that are very different. Not necessarily better or worse, but different enough that we shouldn't be putting them all in one pile and trying to come to a comparable analysis between the two. But it is great to say that we do observe a substantial savings in either case. I would also guess that there may be a stronger response with the tenant engagement program savings, which are those which you are referencing, in Canada, because I believe that the program was rolled out earlier in Canada than it was in the U.S. buildings. But I believe Anna might be able to speak more to that.
If Anna's going to say more, or if you're going to expound on this, Avis, I do want to ask one more thing along these lines, and that has to do with two things. How is it communicated to tenants? How does the tenant engagement take place? And what have you seen in terms of responsiveness?
I think that's probably a good question for Anna.
Anna?
Yeah, so just to back up, maybe I can give a little bit of background here on our Forever Green Tenant Engagement Program. So the intention behind the program is for us to connect tenants and the residents with our property managers and operators to focus on actionable sustainability and wellness-related items. The goal of the program has always been to help us increase tenant loyalty and strengthen our communities, as well as improve sustainability and performance. We found that providing these types of resources, we hope that, you know, tenants will be more readily available to make improvements as it relates to sustainability performance in their space, while also leading to that kind of cleaner, greener, healthier space for them to reside and work in. The way we deliver the program is through a variety of methods. It's every month. We provide resources via email. We also have posters that are often put up in office spaces and lobbies, as well as a resource guide. The feedback we've received has always been positive and interesting in that we certainly focus on a variety of topics in the sustainability space, everything ranging from energy, water, waste, consumption reduction to, you know, GHG emissions, carbon footprint, as well as wellness and community relations.
So the program also has something called nudge theory, which sounds kind of like astrophysics, but it's something different than that, obviously. What is nudge theory, and how does it apply to this?
So nudge theory is actually probably as far from astrophysics as you can get. It's about taking a look at economics through a much more human filter. For a long time, we always viewed economics through the rational man. And then the theory sort of came up over the last several decades that, you know, maybe man, and by man we mean all humanity, isn't quite as rational as we think. And we have lots of evidence of that. So behavioral economics has put forth that you could make these positive reinforcements and indirect suggestions to influence people, to nudge them to certain behaviors. And you can do that at an individual level. You can do that at a group level. The concept of nudge theory was really put forth in a 2008 book called Nudge, Improving Decisions About Health, Wealth, and Happiness, which was written by Richard Thaler and Cass Sunstein. And Richard Thaler won the Nobel Prize in Economics a few years ago on his lifelong work in behavioral economics topics such as this. So it's gained quite a bit of traction over the years. And, of course, tenant engagement is just about that. It's about nudging your tenants. I often use the euphemism poking them. It's about poking at your tenants, doing it consistently, and trying to make sure that they engage in their active use of the building to come to a better outcome.
So, you know, as...
And I would just add also in terms of feedback or at least uptake, you know, the last time we checked, which was from our 2018 results, we're still in the midst of compiling our 2019 results, 82% of our properties across our portfolio participated in the tenant engagement program, which is saying something. And, you know, as a result, I think we had some pretty robust research results because of such a strong participation rate, as well as for how long the program has been actually running for, which is about 5 years.
So the tenant...
As of the 2018.
Okay. So the tenant engagement that you're using to achieve sustainability is part of a program called Forever Green that, as mentioned earlier, is it broader than that? Is it broader than the tenant engagement? Are there more facets to the Forever Green program? And if so, how does that program work?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we have a pretty robust sustainability program at Bentall Green Oak. Part of our Forever Green tracking actually coincides with EcoTracker, which is our proprietary sustainability data management system. So that actually collects both qualitative and quantitative data from our built environment. So we provide that service, you know, supported by our partner, Energy Profiles Limited. So we have a team of analysts and engineers that work to collect the data, do, you know, QA, QC, and provide sort of verifiable reporting that we then, you know, roll up all the way to GRES, the Global Real Estate Sustainability Benchmark, or UNPRI. And so in addition to that external reporting initiative, the data actually works really well for us to have this feedback mechanism back to our operating teams to help them make informed decisions to improve the sustainability performance of their property. So EcoTracker provides comprehensive energy, water waste, emissions reporting, et cetera. And we have a survey platform to capture this type of qualitative to also capture qualitative sustainability data. So, for example, building certifications, tenant engagement participation, as well as health and well-being initiatives.
And just so our listeners get that straight, that's EcoTracker, two separate words, E-C-O as in ecology, and then tracker. So your organization then, meaning Bentall Green Oak, has been actively pursuing actually four types of interventions for several years now. You've used 15 years of monthly operating statements for hundreds of buildings in North America. You measure the impact of the interventions on electricity consumption versus environmental building certification schemes such as LEED certification and Energy Star. So what are the interventions used for, and how did they, I mean, we understand to some extent what they're used for, but what about the results? How did they compare vis-a-vis LEED or Energy Star or other types of environmental certifications?
Okay, so a couple things I want to highlight first before I get into the good stuff. I definitely want to draw the attention to what you said about there being 15 years of monthly operating statement data, because that is what makes this analysis so robust. It gives us a chance to compare these buildings before and after each of the interventions we're going to talk about. And that's the kind of thing that, within the realm of sustainability analysis and understanding the financial implications, we haven't really had the opportunity to do that much yet, because there just hasn't been enough history for us to do that kind of analysis. So we were thrilled when we got our hands on that long a history of active sustainability data in what we break down into four different intervention categories. So we take a look at interventions in two groups, what we call hard interventions and soft interventions. So the hard interventions being those that deal with the buildings and the mechanicals. And we have two categories within there. We have the building certification programs, your traditional green building certification programs that you would observe dominantly in this case, because we are looking at office buildings. We observe LEED certification and BOMA BEST certification in Canada, and in the United States, we observe LEED certification and ENERGY STAR certification. And then we also take a look at the impact of capital expenditures to the building that were made specifically with some intent driven towards sustainability. And this is the question I get asked all the time, but it's really difficult to parse out if you don't have a company specifically tracking their intentions with regards to capital expenditures and sustainability, and Bentall Green Oak is. So we were able to parse out some of the specific costs and paybacks for those capital expenditures. And then, over on the soft category of interventions, we have two more. We have what we've been talking about almost exclusively to this point, which is that tenant engagement program. And then we also have monitoring, and that is that EcoTracker program that Anna was speaking about. So monitoring is a way of providing the data. It's sitting out there, and it's available for property managers or tenants to use if they want, but it's not forcing itself upon anybody. So it's what we would consider a passive soft engagement. It's there if you want to go use it. And then we have the tenant engagement, which is proactive, because the company and the property managers are actively going out there and poking at their tenants, trying to get them to modify their activity. So we take those four interventions, and we take our very robust data and use a whole bunch of fixed effects and other controls to capture and isolate the effect. And we're able to look at the impact of each of those interventions while controlling for the activity within that building of the other three kinds of interventions and measure their individual responses. Now, we always do this, again, separate sample and analysis for Canada than for the U.S. So we do observe different results, say for certification types. Some prove to be very effective in Canada. Some prove to be very effective in the U.S. We did find that BOMA BEST was particularly effective in Canada. This is not to say that LEED or ENERGY STAR were not. It's just that BOMA BEST really proved statistically significant and associated with notable decrease in electricity consumption. Then if we look at the CapEx in a separate lens, so we'll put that aside for a minute. When we take a look at EcoTracker, we also see a strong association with a decrease in electricity consumption, 4.3% decrease in Canada and a 6.2% decrease a similar sort of decrease in the U.S., but with less statistical significance. Now, the interesting thing about the EcoTracker results is that there is a burn-in period on that, which is to say the results are there, but they're not as statistically strong until after the first several years of use. Now, this makes sense because, A, it's a passive system. So the users are not being really encouraged necessarily on an active basis to interact with that monitoring tool. Plus, it may just take a while for them to learn how to interact with it, use it in a way that works best for them, that sort of thing. So there is that burn-in period. But once that burn-in period burns off and the effectiveness takes hold, it actually produces the largest drop and the most consistent decrease of all the other intervention categories. Finally, that Forever Green, the tenant engagement program, what was really interesting about that result was that it started from day one. As soon as you institute this program, as soon as you start poking at your tenants about sustainability, it impacts your electricity savings. I thought this was really interesting because with no burn-in period and also with no evidence that it mattered what you were talking to about sustainability with your tenants. So you could be talking to them about water use. You could be talking to them about turning off lights. It kept mattering in electricity consumption, which means that as long as you're keeping it front of mind for your tenants, even if the topic varies, it's going to continue to have that benefit. And the benefit was fairly consistent. We observed sort of a 10 to 15% decrease in electricity consumption associated with Forever Green, with that tenant engagement program, over the time that we were able to study it. So that's sort of the quick and dirty version of those results. Is there anything you wanted to dig into more specifically? Anything catch your attention in there?
Well, the next thing I wanted to ask you is really along the lines of next steps. I'm wondering, is there a wider deployment that's available, or did you basically roll this out to the complete portfolios, U.S. and Canadian portfolios, or maybe even overseas portfolios, or is there more, will it be actually deployed more widely? Or has that already been done and you got your level of participation, which was very high, and that's that?
We continue to offer the program to all, across the portfolio. So it's really a matter of, at what point it makes sense, depending on location and asset class, whether or not an asset would be participating. But the beauty of our tenant engagement program is that it's low to no cost. I mean, it doesn't cost the operating teams any money. It certainly doesn't cost the tenants or residents any money. So it's one of those, it's very much one of those nice to have sort of low hanging fruit pieces as it relates to helping to drive sustainability related performance.
Okay.
And when we take a When we take a look at the cost savings associated with Forever Green, for instance, in Canada, we show, while controlling for all the other interventions that may or may not be going on in the background, we see that it can result in somewhere between a 28 to 50 cent per occupied square foot savings in electricity costs, dollars, annually, and that is associated with up to 2.4 kilograms of carbon dioxide offset annually as well.
So as we look to the future, are there other sustainability plans or innovations that are on the horizon, that are in the offing, whether they be more sophisticated equipment, capital expenditures, or other behavioral modifications?
Yeah, I would say yes to all of the above. We have a very focused program on sustainable investing, and so we have a dedicated team that's continuing to move the needle. We also, in partnership with Sun Life, launched a sustainability innovation lab, and that's intended for sustainability-specific projects to advance innovation, risk mitigation, and industry leadership in sustainability. So stay tuned for the latest and greatest as we work with our teams across the globe to come up with the next best thing.
Are you actually keeping things under wraps right now because it's proprietary, or does it remain to be seen what actually will emerge?
So we have, there are various streams within the Sustainability Innovation Lab, and actually the research that we undertook with ABIS and team was one stream. So we have a research stream. We also have an employee ideation stream where we continue to work with our teams across the globe for them to provide ideas because they are the closest to their specific assets, and so we're constantly taking in ideas from them. And then we also have sort of a big innovation project at the corporate level where we continue to focus on climate resiliency, social impact, and environmental performance.
So, Avis, you mentioned earlier capital expenditures. What about CapEx? It sounded like you had something more to
Indeed.
Say about that.
Absolutely. So CapEx was the, aside from building certification, it's the other hard intervention category, how we deal with the buildings directly. And through a smaller subsample of our buildings that actually were tracking specifically their sustainable CapEx, we were able to dig in and see what kind of results were associated with those. And we found that environmentally focused CapEx is associated with between a 6 and 8% reduction in electricity consumption in Canada and the U.S. respectively. And those, we were able to dig into a couple of specific types of CapEx activities, such as operational changes and, as I mentioned at the beginning, the lighting retrofit, the all-popular lighting retrofit. And so, for example, an operational change in Canada, perhaps recalibrating your HVAC system in your building to have a little bit more finesse with regards to when heating and cooling is happening at different levels. That has, on average, over that sample, it had a one-time cost of about 2 cents per occupied square foot. And the average savings were between 14 and 26 cents per occupied square foot annually.
Okay, very good. Well, our guests have been Anna Murray, Vice President of Sustainability at Bentall Green Oak, and Avis Devine, who is Associate Professor of Real Estate with the Brookfield Center for Real Estate and Infrastructure at York University, which is located in Ontario, Canada. Ladies, thank you very much for taking the time. It sounds like some really positive results, so thank you for sharing this with us.
Thank you for having us. Thanks for your time.